So how are things going over there?
Oh, you know, we're just dealing with a walking open wound for a president. that's very, very stressful. As there's period, it goes in waves where it's like, oh, I can forget about him. And then the debates happen on Tuesday and we're like, you are quite truly the worst person who incites violence. I mean, it's you can't say he doesn't incite violence. It's wild. He didn't denounce white supremacy at the debate. Yeah. And then he called out this white supremacist group called the Proud Boys, which I'm like, oh my fucking God. You keep thinking you can't get shocked by the blatant disrespect he has for human regard, but he surprises you. So yeah, that's how I am.
Oh man, tell us a little bit, because you obviously want to tell South African fans of your podcast, and those that don't know, please tell them what it is. What is your podcast about?
So Corinne Fisher is my comedy partner, and we co-host Guys We Fucked, the anti-slut shaming podcast. And it started out 7 years ago when Corinne got dumped by the former love of her life in a Panera Bread. And we had been working together for a few years at that point. And one of our projects was this podcast. And she was like, we should just interview every guy we've ever fucked. And we could do it for a podcast, so there's no video. And we'll just call it Guys We Fucked. And we can, you know, learn more about ourselves through the men who've been inside of us. And I was like, that's a good, really good idea. And then I added the anti-slut shaming tagline. And it just took off from there. And it's gone through. So I was in a 7-year relationship that began before the podcast started, I ended 2 years ago.
Thanks to the podcast, or was it just natural that it ended?
I would say it's a little thanks to the podcast, in that the podcast got me understanding how I actually feel about things. It made me realize that I was pretending to be okay with certain qualities in a person that I actually wasn't okay with. Really made me understand childhood trauma, because we kept getting emails from people since the beginning of the show about their sexual assaults, about being molested as a child, about all of the dark parts of sexuality that people don't usually think of when they think of a podcast called Guys We Fucked, but that we cover in depth. And it made me understand that stuff that happens in your childhood can affect you in your adult life, and can cause you to behave in ways that are confusing to you. And instead of hating those parts of yourself and just thinking you're an idiot and you can't change, actually diving into it is painful but beneficial. So it's been quite a journey.
I think one of the biggest things is, but I'm sure you know that, is that you bring from your childhood to your adulthood and into relationships is compromise. Somehow you get told, when visitors come, share your bedroom, share your toys. And then if you have siblings, don't be mean to the younger one. And if it's a girl, let your sister in first. I think those little codings in life prepare you to become this adult that has social media, social pressure, television, fiction, romantic novels. Then you have to concoct a persona that you sort of take on when you have a partner. And then by the time the car and the house and the job and the children come, you've already been prepped to become someone who wakes up in the morning and waters the lawn. And I guess as comics, we see it in a funny way, because we extrapolate pieces of it that we like to put onto the stage. But if you think about it, the tending to the garden or having a barbecue at the backyard on Sundays, on holidays, and having your parents over, all of that is just conditioning. And you're right, is when you're left face to face with your partner, then you realize that you actually hate them for letting you behave like that, because you almost want to say to them, why don't we start this thing off as ourselves?
Wow. That is the best way I have heard how being a kid and going through stuff fucks you up, because you're exactly right with the encoding. You get coded in. It's like, you know, little boys are taught to, it's okay to be angry, it's not okay to cry. Little girls are taught it's okay to cry, but it's not okay to be angry. And then what you have is half of the population not being comfortable crying, the other half not being comfortable angry, and you're going to explode. So it's like, you know, even just to sort through that swamp of bullshit is, oh my God, there's this, and you go through all of these stages of realizing, wait, what happened when I was a kid? That was coding. Like, exactly like you said, such a good way to put it. I've never heard it put that way, but that's exactly what happens, because it almost feels like out of your control, even though you can change it. It's a wild ride.
I guess whenever you, Jesus, I feel like this is therapy for me. Whenever you hear stuff about relationships and why relationships end, and then you, and often, and I think it's popular psychology that exploited the theory of commitment phobia. Mm-hmm. But then if you think about the things that bring about that phobia, it's not the last action, which is buying the house or moving in together, having children or taking on that job that says you're going to be here until forever. Those actions at the end become almost the final straw. It's almost like you keep waiting for someone to rescue you, to say it's okay to be, right?
Yes, because you don't understand that you're the only human being in charge for rescuing yourself. And in order to be a good partner and to have a relationship that can be the best it can be, you have to save yourself first and get all that conditioning. And I think it's so rare, because romantic movies, television, songs, like they all kind of fetishize this unhealthy version of love.
Yes. Yes. I was saying to a friend of mine the other time, I was like, When I was in a long-term relationship, I was the most unhappiest because I wasn't myself. But then you can also be in a relationship, but think like a single person. And I term the theory or the concept single-minded. When you're thinking like a single person, you care. When you're thinking like a person in a relationship, you're expecting someone to care for you.
Yeah, which is so not. I mean, you can't, I would never want to date somebody. And this, I didn't realize this until maybe a year ago. So many, at least straight women, because that's what I am, so that's mostly what I know, date men who hate themselves. And you can't really identify it right away, but then it starts to surface. Little bubbles come up and you're like, is that weird? Is that mean? Was that fucked up? And then eventually it just explodes on you, which is what happened in my 7-year relationship. And then you're like, can I even fucking trust myself? Why did I was so in love with this person, truly, for 6.5 of the 7 years. That's a long time.
When they were still single-minded. Mm-hmm. When they did things that they liked, because they liked the things, and you went into their world, you know?
And I was all too willing of a participant to do that. So it takes two to get sucked in. I just didn't understand what was happening.
From a woman's point of view, what are the things that guys do that just show immense insecurity?
Oh my God.
Where do you begin?
Insulting a woman when she doesn't want to fuck you. That's a big one.
That honest with you, Kristen, we can go point by point on this one. It's also the coding bullshit that we grew up with.
Oh, it's absolutely. The more women a guy scores, the better he is, the more of a man he is, the more value he has, the more everybody envies him.
And the anger that is attached to the entitlement. When you feel like you've made such an effort to get to this point, and then this person is just going to say no to you and not being able to take no for an answer, right?
Yes.
That's a big red flag.
Yes, the entitlement is exactly right too, because thinking you deserve sex and then reacting when a woman turns you down, even if it's in the most respectful way, and I don't give a shit if she's a cunt to you. You fucking get over it. You're a grown man. You're not a little boy. And this isn't the playground, you know, this is a human being. This is not an object. And sexual assault too is like, I almost feel stupid for not, I mean, I don't get mad at myself for it, but it's fascinating how naive I was to how many people all over the world have been sexually assaulted or molested as a kid. And that's the other thing and it's mostly male perpetrators for the very vast majority are male. And I'm kind of obsessed with figuring out why. And I think there's so many layers to that. Thinking a man thinking he deserves a woman's body is one of them. The all these little codes that could kind of, depending on who you are as a person and how you are individually, could set off something like that. And no accountability, no transparency. It's just like, oh my God. That's why it's like magnified for so many people. One of the many reasons why it's magnified that Donald, a person is our president who has been accused of rape. I think he has 13 rape allegations against him and says things about women's bodies that he says. It's just, and then that gets voted for. I oh man, it's hard to deal with.
I feel like you're doing this for me.
I'm just I've been electrified this week, specifically from Thursday, and listening to recaps and other people's opinions of the debate, and just everything he embodies is the worst in the human spirit.
What's another red flag?
What's
another? I should have known.
So many. God, I have a joke of my stand-up act about I had to start a red flag diary because I'm like, my friends accuse me of not seeing red flags in the terrible men I choose, but they're wrong. I see them. But when I see them, yeah. I go, challenge accepted. It's not helpful. just anger, temper. I understand that people can have tempers, but if a temper of a guy flares up within the first couple months of meeting that person, that's you need to get a hold on that before you even start dating. You know, that means you have more work to do. I wouldn't say it's a red flag if the person isn't in therapy, but I think it's a huge plus if the person is in therapy. Because I think no matter what your deal is, if you're in therapy, to me, that says you give a shit about your behavior. You give a shit about how you affect other people and you care about having a good relationship with yourself.
Do you think that chivalry, right?
Mm-hmm.
Plays a big part in some sort of borderline misogyny? Does it make sense?
That's a great question. I get kind of, not pissed. What's the word?
Yeah.
I roll my eyes sometimes. I find myself rolling my eyes when I haven't had sex in 8 months and I've not gone on any dates. So, you know, it's been a while. But from what I remember, I would roll my eyes at a guy like if we're walking down the sidewalk, for example, like he has to walk on the side where the cars are. I'm not like, fuck you. I'm a bad husband. You know, I'm not like that, but I'm like, okay. You know, but I don't know. I don't even understand quite yet my relationship to chivalry, because some guys can display it in a way that's really kind and I appreciate. And I'm certainly not one of those. There's so many different types of feminists, I think. And I personally don't. I'm not one of those like, don't hold the door for me, you piece of shit. I'm a woman. You know, like I'm not like that, because I would love if somebody held the door for me, man or woman. But I think if chivalry was just transitioned to manners across the board, like let's hold the door for people, that would feel less like we're demeaning women, you know, because they're weak little stupid birds.
Yes, because I also feel like guys who are overly chivalrous, if there's such a word,
there is, yeah,
tend to be possessive as well.
Uh-huh. It's weird.
Aren't they the same guys who, when you want to go to the bathroom, say, I'll walk you. And then once you go by yourself, and who is that guy you were talking to? Aren't they the same guy?
I've certainly seen some parallels with people who are aggressively chivalrous. That's fucking weird. So that's a red flag. But I have a lot of guy friends that are it's just how their dad taught them. And I will say my dad, I love my dad so much. And he was drafted in the military when he was 18. So he was in it for many, many decades. So he has this like idea of manners. And I have an older brother that's my only sibling. And he's 9 years older than me. And when he would just like push me, cause I would be a whining, crazy person to him. Like when he would babysit me, I remember, because I'm talking about it with my therapist, like I would scream at him because I couldn't do that to my parents. And my brother was always like, I'm not doing anything. Like, what the fuck? Like, and he was rightfully confused. And the second my brother raised his voice at me, which honestly, I deserved it, or like pushed me, and I would push him. So I wouldn't call that like, he wasn't abusive at all. He was very loving. My dad would freak out in a way. And he's like, you do not raise your voice at your sister. You don't. And she gets everything first. And it felt like, it was almost like he was not intentionally doing this, but like trying to make me like a princess daddy's girl. And I'm just, that's so not who I am, even though I love my dad. And I always thought that was interesting. I wasn't allowed to do things that he was allowed to do, my brother, at the same age, because I was a girl. And I would say to my dad, I remember yelling at my dad, like, is this because I'm a girl? And he's like, yep. I'm like, whoa, word? You're just going to be straight up like that, huh? Wow. Okay. Well, glad we got that cleared up. So.
That's funny because he's just like, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep, that's it.
Yeah. Well, he looks at me as more delicate than my brother.
I thought of this story about when we were kids. We were maybe 13 years old. This is a funny story. It sounds unbelievable, but it's true. There was this porn VHS tape that was circulating amongst all of us, right?
Yeah, tale as old as time.
And then we got hold of the tape, then we went to go watch it at my house. And then there was a power outage mid this VHS tape. And then 2 hours, my parents were coming home. So we unplugged the VHS, and then we carried it around the town looking for a place where there was electricity. And the only place we could go to was a house of deaf people. It was literally, it was a house. They had the biggest TV, but it was deaf people in the house, right? And there was this big TV that they had, the VHS, but there was electricity there. But the only condition to us, because we got to the house through our friend who knew how to bullshit sign language.
Sign language.
so he knew how to, but he was like, basically gestured, and I was like, we didn't need you here from showing us the house. We could have just done this ourselves. So, but we got in there. And then the condition was we had to watch the tape, the rest of the tape with them. But it was two males and one guy. So
yeah, they were like, we're deaf, but we're not blind.
But the shitty part about that house is the TV remote control, the volume did not work. So everything was on high blast.
Oh my God.
So you can imagine the neighbors were listening to all of it. Because if you can imagine a township house, small,
yeah,
four room, with the neighbors quite close, and it was broad daylight. So the only condition that... So we were listening to this and we were trying to gesture that the sound is on. They wouldn't give a fuck about what we were thinking. And when we came out the house, we were red as fuck because the old lady from next door was listening to 45 minutes of bullshit that was going on. The tape was out of the VHS and then we left. And then I left the VHS tape inside my closet, came back from school the next day. My mom had redone my closet and then put the VHS tape on top of the bed.
Nice. Honestly, that's hilarious. Wow. Wow. Good thing you're a stand-up comedian. That's that. You can't write a story like that. That's wild.
Needless to say, I couldn't have dinner that night because I couldn't look at it in the face. I was traumatized by watching porn with deaf people. And then I was, the lady came out and judged me. And my mom took the whole entire tape. Because you know those tapes, they had that cover that was graphic. That was bullshit.
Yeah.
I took that tape and I hid it under the bed. And then next morning, I took it back to school. And then as we were growing up, to tie in with your podcast, is when you get taught that porn is ungodly, not even ungodly, but it's not good, right? How do you think in the 21st century that we're living in now? I think porn has helped me to become more discerning and less desperate to hook up with people.
Oh, that's exciting. What porn do you watch?
No, basically...
Because it's not doing that here.
Because I feel like if you're a teenager with pent-up sexual energy, you start going on dates, not sometimes because you like the person. It's just because you want to get with the person.
Yeah. You want to rip the Band-Aid off of all the firsts. And then but it's like, do you want to get with that person because you are horny? Or do you want to get with the person for social pressure?
Yes.
For me, it was the pressure.
So how my theory is, hasn't porn helped in decreasing the sexual pressure that makes guys wear those open-chested t-shirts and become horny dogs and get out there and want to bang?
I fucking wish. Because what porn has done to men here, and I obviously cannot speak for all men, but a giant chunk of them I can. There's a lot of, the tube sites are owned by one person. That's fucked up. Yeah, Pornhub owns every tube site. So we don't pay for porn, but yes, you can pay for porn. There's a lot of really amazing websites, but that's not what everybody goes to. Pornhub is the Google of porn. Like it's so
YouTube.
Yeah, exactly. It's just very commonplace. And so and I'm guilty of watching it too. The thing that I have seen that I worried about and then I saw and I'm still worried about is certain acts in sex, if you're doing BDSM and there's hitting involved, there's choking involved, a lot of times do not show the negotiation conversation that takes place and the fact that kink is actually the very spine of kinky sex is trust. So that's why we would, you know, Corinne and I, we had a girl message us saying she wanted to go on a kink site and lose her virginity in that way with like bond, and she was 18, and we're like, I do not, I mean, your body, your choice, boo, but and I would say, fuck no, don't do that, because you don't trust the person. You have to have established trust with that person. And the people in the kink community, because I've certainly been to a lot of sex clubs where it's kink positive and that's kind of their focus. And it's a wonderful, beautiful place where you can use your imagination. But I think a lot of times men, at least here, don't understand that if a woman is the sub and she's getting the shit, you know, she's getting smacked or whatever it is, she's actually the one in control. But you miss all of the stuff that happens up until that point where that establishes that she's the one in control. And that is what a disservice that is to people, because then you just think that that's what that is. And there's so many of my friends that have stories of the first time having sex with a guy and they smack the girl in the face because they think that that's what women like. And it's like, you gotta have a fucking conversation about that. You can't. And I truly believe that some of those guys think that this is what you want. And even if it is, not the first time, not without a conversation. Are you fucking crazy? But they don't feel crazy because that's all they consume is just, you know, so I think it fucks people up here.
You're so correct. Before guys got there, they also got the initiation of the act through romantic movies.
Mm-hmm.
And you're sitting in a couch, then the arm stretches over, and then you bring ling ling, then the negotiation happens under your breath. Nowhere in a romantic movie is there ever permission.
Never. Request
given, right?
I don't think so. And that's mutual respect. That's the basis of mutual respect.
Yes, it's almost like the opening of the door to come up for coffee. And I don't know who decided that coffee is great after walking someone home.
Yeah.
It almost like that was code for, do you want to fuck?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's like its culture has done us a disservice, because that's why the Guys We Fuck podcast, over the course of 7 years, we've talked to so many sexual intellectuals, is the best way I can describe it, about these types of concepts. Because I didn't realize any of the stuff I just said, that was acquired over the 7 years of doing the show. I never thought about that stuff that way. Honestly, I was in the same boat as the guys who were just looking at Pornhub to get, you know, to rub one out. And I was in that boat too. So I feel like I think of the philosophy of sex totally differently. And I realized that a lot of the sex I had was, I wasn't in my own body.
Right?
Yeah. So you're just doing it for other reasons instead of like that animalistic, like, you know, it can be really nice and beautiful and hot, but not when you do it to be seen in way. I don't know. I just, people fuck it up for themselves a lot.
But I guess that comes with age as well. I think the older you get, the less, I think the more discerning you become and you find alternative ways to kind of express yourself. Because I also think that domination or that dominance is a way to express yourself. I'll come pick you up. I'll pay for the movie and the dinner. I'll drop you off. You invite me up. I will put my arm around your neck, and then I will kiss you, and I will ask you if you're, you see? I think.
And all along that way, a lot of times also due to coding with young women, I think, a lot of times young women don't say anything. And then they're upset afterwards, which is, I absolutely understand that. But you have to, that's a fucking deep dive, man, to go, why did I allow that to happen? And I feel like I assaulted myself, but I can't blame it on him. And I have to identify the points in the evening where I felt uncomfortable. And I have to really ask myself, why didn't I think I could say anything?
Do you think, oh man, Christine, we're gonna write a book about this. If things start off like that with the coding, as we've discussed, then you go in a long-term relationship with this person and you live with this person. And then we both have moments where we think our coding was kind of bullshit. Aren't we becoming other people now?
You're getting closer to your authenticity, your true, genuine self. And then you can actually have so much more fun in a relationship.
Yes, because that introspection that you're talking about, when now you have a living girlfriend as a male and she says no sometimes, then you're like, where does that come from?
Yeah, right? My God. Well, and it's funny because men, I think men are more, straight men are more used to being turned down for sex. But then there was one time in my 7-year relationship when my boyfriend did not want to have sex with me. I'll never forget it. One time. So that to me says, oh, women are never, hardly ever refused sex. And I can only speak for myself, but I acted like a little bitch baby about it. I'm like, you want to fuck me? What's your problem? Like, and then I'm like, whoa, Christina. Just because he's a man does not mean he owes you sex, you bitch. Sit down. Like, you really have, you have to be willing to humble yourself to grow. That's what I'm trying to say.
What did you find yourself saying? Were you like, what the fuck? Who do you think?
Yeah, I was pissed. And then he said, I don't have to fuck you just because you want me to. And I was like, that's a good point. All right, fine.
I devised a sneaky way to kind of know if I must act all gentlemanly and not propose the act. That code has worked for me 90% of the time.
Ooh, do tell.
Whenever you go to a woman's place, you always do your recon, hit the bathroom, check what kind of underwear is hanging. Wet underwear that has been, you know what I'm saying? Like if you see.
I've never hung underwear in my bathroom. Except period underwear, but that's a little, you know.
If you see that, it's time to act like a gentleman. So.
Is that a thing they do in South Africa? Hang underwear in the bathroom?
It's my old technique. So I'm like, if I know that the chances are slim to none, I act like I'm not here for that.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
And then I'll hear words like, you know, I love the fact that you were able to come upstairs or come into my place and not even act that way. That was gentlemanly of you. And I'm like, I've done my research.
Oh, well, yeah, that means a lot to a woman because. I don't know how it is there, but sometimes, like, I feel like there was a while where when a woman said, like, before she invites you to your place, by the way, we're not having sex, and then you would have sex. But I say that and I fucking mean it. Like, I'm not, because I also understand how that can fuck up a guy's, that's not direct. You like, it is my responsibility to communicate clearly. And I understand that asking for permission, it loses its luster if you're like, do I have permission to kiss you or touch your shoulder? Like, fuck you. That's so gross. And now I'm dry. Like, I never want to have sex with you. But they're doing the thing that we're saying we want. So it's like, how do you find that middle ground? And I think what I said earlier about being in your own body, I think is so important, because then when you are, you could communicate with some swag, with and some ease, and kind of go with the flow and have a true connection.
But also remember that the least you know about who you are sexually, the more attractive you might become to someone else because of your vulnerability. Mm-hmm. Makes them, have you ever been in a situation where the other person that you're having sex with is super needy and insecure? And it almost,
yeah, my
like
first ever boyfriend. My first ever boyfriend. I was a virgin. He was 19. So yes, that was, and he was cheating on me the whole time, or the majority of the time.
Completely, right?
I think he spotted that I was 16, a virgin, and because I told him that, and I think he was like, I could take this girl for a loop around the block and confuse her and fuck other chicks in college because she's in high school, and he was right, and so that took some therapy.
Yes, but I find that insecurity is attractive to the wrong people, and this confidence that you have now is unattractive to certain people.
Oh, hell yeah. It's a good litmus test.
That's why men, misogynistic men, hate dating women their own age.
Oh, I agree. Yeah, or a woman who's fully realized and who actually likes herself, who has a true sense of self-esteem, because it's like, I can't pull wool over her eyes, so this is boring. Let me date a young 22-year-old.
Yeah. Jeez.
That's fine. It's so funny because I definitely feel like my personal interest of men, like the pool of men that I'm in, I don't even have a crush on somebody. It's and I know quarantine.
I don't have a crush on anybody.
No, not one person.
Biden, quarantine. No, no.
What'd you say?
Not even Biden. You're like, no, you can.
God, no, Jesus Christ. I mean, you know, if Leonardo DiCaprio was like, hey, you want to go out to dinner? I'd be like, sure. But like, I don't have an active crush on an actual real human being that I could potentially talk to and go out with. But I've been doing work on myself, specifically with the childhood trauma stuff that, it's like you have to go, one of the many books that I've been reading about the subject, because I've been reading a lot over quarantine, but like physical, actual books, which has been really nice, is that in order to really fix yourself and heal yourself and kind of recarve these neural pathways that have been carved since you were a baby, you have to go deep into the desert for a long time and then come back. And it's going to be really painful and hard and feel like you're going backwards and all this stuff. But I'm finally on my way back out of the desert, I feel. So I don't have any interest. I had a tarot card reading the other night because Corinne, for her birthday trip, had somebody do it over Zoom, like give us tarot card readings, which I love. And she was like, yeah, you don't want to be with anybody right now. And I'm like, yeah, no, I feel like I should just because I'm a girl and I host a sex podcast, but I really don't. I don't want to at all.
You have no, when you see someone, do you see them in that cartoon vibe where you see all the things that could be wrong about them?
No, because I still wear rose colored glasses and I truly do see the best in people. And I think I used to think that was a naive thing in me, but it's a survival mechanism. When you have a mom with depression or bipolar disorder and she's you know, up and down, you don't know which mom you're going to get which day, it really forces you as a kid to grow fast, emotionally mature much faster than you would have otherwise. And I think I have, like, I see the best in people, but I actually do, like, see their good qualities. So I think... I want to get to a place where I can feel comfortable not doing that and not just seeing them in the most perfect light on top of the pedestal that I built for them. So I got to figure that out first before I can enjoy my next relationship.
Have you ever dated someone with bipolar? Because I feel like what you've just explained now is my entire dating history.
Oh, interesting. Oddly, I haven't. But I have a lot of friends that are bipolar. And... I went on a date with one guy and he told me that he was bipolar and I was 19 at the time and I had to deal with suicide attempts, from my parents. And I associated bipolar with that. So I was like, I feel terrible not dating somebody because of that, but I can't do that again. I can't be on the phone while someone's trying to take their own life again. Like I can't do it because I didn't understand what it was. So now I have a little bit different perspective because I think people who are, especially schizophrenia and a lot of times bipolar, I hate that it's called mental illness, because I don't think that does it justice. I think that it's, I heard it said in a documentary about Daryl Hammond, a bipolar disorder and schizophrenia and stuff like that can be caused by a mental injury. So something that happened to you when you were really young. And your brain, my therapist always explains to me that a child's nervous system cannot handle the fact that mom or dad cannot take care of me. Wow. Babies, there's been so many studies about babies in orphanages that got the food they needed, got the clothing they needed, got the shelter they needed, but weren't held and they died. Humans need, and they did an experiment that was unethical, but, one of the books I read was talking about it with monkeys, and they gave all these baby monkeys, they called it a surrogate mother. So it was a man-made monkey with milk bottles for the nipples so that they can go to the mom and get the food. One was made of really fluffy, light material, like very soft and comforting material. And the other surrogate monkey mother was made of wire and hard and rough. And the baby monkeys that had the wire mother died. But they had everything else that they needed. So they had sustenance to sustain their own life, but human contact and love and that is so important to living. And you don't really, like, I didn't really realize that until I've been doing this deep dive and doing all this reading and reading research papers. And I'm like, wow, that's so fascinating. So it just really made clear to me where I have holes in my heart and what they're from. So I don't know what the original question was. I just went on a tangent.
When you've been single as long as you have, do you feel like you are, which monkey are you here? Are you the monkey looking for the soft surrogate, or are you like,
the soft for sure. I honestly look at men like ticking time bombs at the moment, and I'm like, well, that's a sign that I'm not ready to date. Because I went on one date over quarantine with this guy who was so handsome, very kind, so just sweet, wonderful guy. But I even told him this. I don't know why this came out of my mouth, but I'm like, I don't know why, but you're like a bomb to me, and I kind of want to stay away from you, and it's not personal, so sorry. And that's a clue that I shouldn't date. And I've been doing a lot of meditating lately. And that's really helpful. And when I have emotions and feelings come up, I ask myself how I feel all throughout the day.
My biggest lesson, now that you mentioned that, with meditation and reading and spending time with yourself, is learning that everything else is not everyone's fault. Like, often you would find, if something irritates you, you'd go, why did they do that to me? That is very hard to let go of as you grow older. And I think as comics, we get sucked into that kind of thinking because that's what makes us funny.
But you can make fun of yourself for being like, I make fun of myself for being like that, for being the victim, because I certainly had that mindset for a long time.
Yes. So when you find someone who has done the deep dive, has done the work, and they don't feel like everything is their fault, right? They're less likely to feel like everything is your fault as well. Because the concept of blame doesn't exist. There's circumstances, and then you are part of the equation. There's the uncalculated risk of something like that happening to you or someone else who might have come before you. Once you do those calculations when you're dealing with someone and you're about to come up with a problem, a solution comes up quicker. That's what I find.
Absolutely.
In comedy, we do that without thinking. We feel and empathize for the audience. We circumvent topics that we know will make them uncomfortable. We latch onto the ones that we know that we will both enjoy, but us more than them. But they'll leave there thinking, wow, that's something for me to think about. And then we are going to go do some therapy, get work on yourself, because I'm here doing therapy. But why is that in interpersonal relationships? Why is it that we are unable to do that? It's a question I've asked myself.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think so many people are uncomfortable with the idea of taking responsibility for every single thing that happens to you, every event, every person that comes in your life. And responsibility has nothing to do with blame. Blaming is,
that's
a slippery slope. I think blaming has a lot of ugh attached to it. And one of the books that I really, really love that changed my thinking is called The Tao of Fully Feeling by, I think, Pete Walker. I know the title is The Tao of Fully Feeling. And it's basically how to learn how to, if you suffer from childhood trauma, for example, learn how to get mad at your parent, not to their face, but allow yourself to feel angry. Because when a parent mistreats you as a child, a lot of times it's your body's defense mechanism to not allow you to feel that feeling as a kid because your nervous system can't handle it. And then what you do is when you do grow up and you're fucked up and you're an adult and you go to therapy, you talk about that parent still on a pedestal because that's how you had to do it when you were a child, with not being able to accept that they did these things to you. And then once the therapist goes, that's kind of fucked up, isn't it? I'm like, wait, is it? Oh, fuck. That's a whole year of realizing, oh, fuck. And then there's another year or two of, I feel uncomfortable getting mad at them. And then you got to let yourself get comfortable, not to their face, but like allow yourself, like, what did 5-year-old Christina need when her mom was brushing her hair too hard on purpose and taking her anger out on her hair? Like, what did you need? What were you scared of? And you're like, oh my Christ. So it's really like, I should not be near humans right now or like for a long time. So I'm glad I'm taking this time out. But I think personal responsibility, back to what I was originally saying, will allow you to have an interpersonal relationship where you don't throw the blame around and you actually can comfortably talk about, hey, what you did made me feel this way. I don't know if that's what you intended, but I'd like to just talk to you about that, if that's okay. And you can have that conversation, and it's not as scary as you originally thought it was.
You know what I think it is? Oh yeah, you're so right. I feel the more work I do on myself, the more deep dives I do, the more meditation I do, the more reading and the more talking that I do, and the more being by myself that I do outside of a relationship, the more relationships look like a mess. Don't you feel like therapy to people like us is counterproductive?
I like, said to Corinne the other day, I'm like, wait a second. Are relationships for fucked up people?
You're like, I'm healing to get wounded again?
Yeah, because I'm like, who do I know that's having a good time in one? I don't necessarily. But then you think about, that's why I love, it's the best thing that's ever happened to me doing Guys We Fuck for so many reasons. But one of them is I'm introduced to all these ways of living that I was never taught or shown as a kid. Like you can be married to a person if you want to get married and not live in the same house. What? Like, yeah. That's fucking wild to me. And I'm like, that sounds like that makes sense. Like a lot of sense.
Isn't that being single-minded?
It's allowing yourself to have your own space. Because
you're still behaving like a single person, although you're married. Because who said marriage has to come with being in the same place?
Right. And it's like you have to be attached. And also like this notion of if a relationship doesn't work, it fails. I don't know if that's in your culture, but in American culture, with all the fucking rom-coms we get shoved up our assholes, if a relationship doesn't work, it's a failure. And that's so not true. That's so not true. A relationship not working is one of the best lessons you can learn about yourself, because if you do have unresolved trauma, it's going to come up in your romantic encounters for sure. Because that's the most charged emotion and that's the most charged relationship you can have with another human being, and the closest physically and emotionally in most cases that you would get to another person.
Do you have a crazier story that even if you told us now, we wouldn't believe you?
My ex-boyfriend of 7 years, before he dated me, he dated a famous porn star for 2 years. And I was, especially back then when I was 23, when I started dating him, I've always wanted to be the sexy woman. And I couldn't find it in myself. And this woman, her name's Stoya, because people always want to know who it is. And she doesn't mind if I say it. So it's Stoya, because we ended up interviewing her. There was so many hurdles at the beginning of my relationship with this man that I realized was him being an asshole, but I didn't chalk that up to him being an asshole, where he would tell me things that I didn't want to hear about her. And it got me extremely jealous. Yeah. He would say things like, well, when I would date Stoya, she would take my hand and put it up her skirt in public to let me know how wet I made her in public. I'm like, I don't want to do that. That's ugh. And so instead of like openly explaining, like, this is not appropriate for you to tell me, boyfriend. Okay. You fucking bitch about this to your friends, not me. I was his shoulder to lean on. And I very graciously, openly accepted that role, had no business accepting that role. Yeah. And so all of these things started happening that made it was comical how much my jealousy was just being poked at by like a fire. She was on the cover of all of these porn shops in New York with this movie poster for a movie called Pirates, a porn called Pirates. A couple months into his dating, she was on the cover of the Village Voice, which was on every corner of the city, like in a free little kiosk. It was just her face, and the headline read, "The prettiest girl in New York." What'd you say?
It was Stoya, 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 Stoya everywhere.
Yep. And the headline of that cover, her cover, was "The prettiest girl in New York is a porn star." And I was like, are you fucking kidding me? And then when I would go over his house, I realized that he had all these fleshlights of hers still at his house. And I was like, I didn't know what a fleshlight was. And if you're listening, you don't know. It's looks like a big flashlight. And when you unscrew the cap, it's either a mouth, vagina, or butthole molded off of that specific porn star. They sell them as merch. And he had like a shitload of her fake holes in his closet. And I was like, that's disrespectful, right? And he was like, yeah, I guess. And he threw him out. And then fast forward a couple months later, about 8 to 9 months into us dating, we moved in together. Because like I said, we fell in love so hard and so fast. Also, that's New York speed because rent's so expensive. And then we lived together a couple years at that point in this apartment, because I've lived here for 10. And Hurricane Sandy, which was not the first major hurricane to hit New York, but it's very rare that a Category 3 or 4 hurricane comes barreling into Manhattan. And that happened while we were living together. I live in the first floor. The unit that I live in is 2 stories. Top floor is the first floor. The bottom floor is in the basement. My boyfriend's office where he worked was in the basement. And when Hurricane Sandy came and it hit, we lost power, which I never experienced. Losing power in the biggest city in the world, it's just, it's so, it was so bizarre. We lost power. First, the lights were all flickering. We were like, are we going to lose? We did not think it was even possible to lose power in Manhattan. We lost power, and then the bottom floor, our basement floor, started flooding. It ended up flooding with 3 feet of sewage water that came up from the toilet and the tub. It was truly felt like Armageddon, and we were panicking and running all of our shit upstairs because we didn't even know it was possible to flood. Like, I just, it's Manhattan. It just, you don't associate that with hurricane in the path of a hurricane that way. And so I ended up going in the closet of his office, and I found what I thought was a flashlight, and I unscrewed it, and I realized that it was her butthole. And so I just stood there, yeah, in the middle of 3 feet of sewage poop water in my home with hardly any lights on, just my cell phone flashlight, staring into the eye of her butthole as Hurricane Sandy came barreling over us. So, yeah, there's one.